Are you ready?
Yeah, I was born ready.
And welcome to the Audio Choke at MMATorch.com, a mixed martial arts love letter from the 49th state. As always,
I'm Greg Rowan.
I'm Toby Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. Here we go!
You know, it's nice having you back, because it was really weird. Like, Toby and I were kind of looking at each other last time, like, huh. And then Toby just started talking.
I hardly say anything.
But you started.
I do the intro.
You do the intro. But you always break up the tension if we run out of stuff to talk about. We were like, right, Matt, what did you think of that fight? And you're like, I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
But then that gives
Fedor cheats on his wife.
And that gives me and Greg time to recover and come up with more stuff to talk about.
All right.
Indeed.
Well, I'm going to type up UFC in Google Images. You guys talk about what you want.
So we should note that Greg Rowland is now our grappling expert.
That's right.
On the show.
Yeah, for the next 2 weeks, I will be giving all kinds of in-depth discussions on grappling.
Yeah, well, congratulations. You got a bronze medal in a local grappling tournament?
Heck yeah, because I didn't lose right away.
Yes.
So got a bronze, which is third place for those who aren't familiar with our medal.
Oh, I'm sure
ranking.
We have a lot of third place listeners. I know all too well what the bronze is.
What does that mean?
Our listeners deserve a gold.
They do. They get a gold from us.
Yes. But it was a jiu-jitsu tournament?
Yes, no-gi Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so, you know, basically just wrestling with chokes and stuff. It's same thing they do at the Abu Dhabi competition. That's the big no-gi Brazilian jiu-jitsu Super Bowl.
Mm.
This was more of a local level. A bunch of the local camps were represented. My camp did really well. There were three of us, and all three of us got medals in our respective weight classes. We were a small camp, but did quite well.
We're very proud of you, Greg, for representing your camp and the Audio Choke.
If only I could have done a speech afterwards, I would have totally hyped it up, but I didn't get any speeches.
I would like to thank my camp!
Yeah, that, and then there was a lot of barfing going on, so...
Yeah, was that from the weight cut, or what was that?
That was from exhaustion, because in all honesty, like, I had great intentions of training for this tournament, and I hadn't been on a mat in a year. So there was no cardio at all. I barfed between matches. It was purely on ingrained technique from a long time ago when I was training.
You're showing solidarity with Alessio Sakara.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he barfed too, huh?
Yeah, he had to pull out of his fight with Jorge Rivera on UFC 122.
Well, just imagine if you put, like, a lot of effort into it in training. You probably could have gotten the gold, baby.
Yeah, maybe. I would have at least, made a decent showing in that last match that I was in instead of just getting thrown on my head and, losing.
You'll get them next time.
Next time.
Yes.
That and the two guys above me have to go into a different weight class next time.
Were they, like, that much? Did they make weight and then, like, balloon back up or...
I'm not really sure what the exact deal is, but I was also far and away the smallest guy in the weight class at 176.
But you maxed out, right? You had to cut weight.
Well, here's the thing on that, is I did cut weight, but then the scale at the Elastic Club was 2 pounds higher than the scale at the gym that we weighed in at. So the 2 pounds that I cut were a waste. I didn't have to cut that at all. I weighed in at 174 and said an F word to the guy that was doing the scale.
Frizzle? Frump.
But yeah, there were some big dudes there. That was my first weight cutting experience whatsoever, even if it wasn't necessary. That's the first time I've ever tried doing such a thing. And, I know that you go in there and you sweat out a lot of weight, but I don't really know any of the science behind it, what you can do, what you can't do, and that. So I just got in a sauna and waited, basically.
How long did you have to wait for?
I was in there for about 45 minutes.
To lose 2 pounds?
2 pounds.
45 minutes? That's not too bad. What'd you do to entertain yourself?
Well, I had my phone in there, and I have an iPhone, so that was... that was my source of entertainment.
See, I'm
there.
Always worried about, like, the humidity or heat getting to electronics, because I'd go to the gym and hit the sauna, or I prefer the steam room.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
I'll do the steam room sometimes,
but I'll never bring my phone into a steam room. I'll bring my phone into a sauna, and I don't know what kind of phone you got, but the iPhone recognizes when it's too hot and it'll shut down.
Oh, I have a flip phone with an antenna.
Ooh, so. Yeah, you might not want to risk that. But
yeah, Zach Morris would be very upset if I broke it.
Yeah, for those of us cool people with iPhones, we can bring them into saunas safely, and it'll let us know when we need to take it out and put it back in our locker.
Oh, that's pretty neat. I'd kind of worry about the moisture from my hands or whatever.
So you are now a grappling and weight-cutting expert.
No, I want to talk about iPhones and sauna some more.
Well, yeah, no, that's fine. I'm just adding to his laurels.
Oh, okay.
Well, if you've got a towel, you know, you can keep your hand dry.
That's
and
true.
Do all that stuff.
Are we still talking about weight-cutting?
We're talking about iPhones.
Masturbation joke.
Yeah, come on in.
Speaking of iPhones, UFC 122. Happened last weekend.
What does that have to do with iPhones?
Nothing.
I'm sure Dana White tweeted about it.
He did. Man, is he angry.
Oh, is he mad?
Like,
what happened?
I know it's Dana White and he swears stuff, but like he like literally just like calls people on like responds to people on Twitter. Like he's like, hey, at UFC fan 122, you're an F face. like I know he wears muscle shirts and likes to swear, but I mean, like, you're the president of a company that is like a multi-million. Whatever.
Sure, but it's him actually
still,
on Twitter.
Still be
so upset people
about
were.
This.
I hear. All right, look, I'll level with you people. I didn't watch it. But I hear it was at best okay. So maybe people were on Twitter going, this sucks, yeah, their usual fanboy.
And there's some of that, yeah.
And then Dana White would be like, shut up!
Yeah, this is the best show ever. You guys just don't understand. UFC's awesome.
If you didn't like it, don't watch it. F-tard.
All right, what happened?
I fell asleep twice watching the main event.
Wow.
I DVR'd it and was watching it like 2 in the morning. Both times, so.
Okay.
Kind of my fault, not a reflection necessarily on Nate Marquardt or Yushin Okami. Yushin Okami pulled off a close decision over Nate Marquardt. I mean, it was I believe he took a unanimous decision, but it was most cards had it 29-28.
Yeah, but I mean, there was also just the fact that there wasn't really a whole lot that happened
right
in the match. So, I mean, he won, but it wasn't like he blew Marquardt out of the water or anything.
Right. Very close fight. Not a lot happened. No huge exchanges or any. I don't think it was really. There was ever a moment where anyone thought it was close to being finished. It was.
No, I heard Marquardt landed a punch in the second.
He did. I think he landed a punch at some point.
Yeah, and that was the most significant hit of the fight.
Right, like single hit. I mean, Okami was really working the jab a lot, and he got Marquardt bloody a little bit, but yeah, there's no like, oh, he rocked up, it's crazy. It was like, yeah, I mean, you could clearly see Okami was landing that jab a lot throughout, especially in the third round. But yeah, it was just not a lot to go off of in that fight, but I mean, I think, you know, we talk about all the time on this show, you know, the entertainment aspect versus the sporting aspect, but I mean, at the end of the day, Yushin Okami won the fight, and he deserves a title shot. It was kind of how they hyped it, and you know, he beat a quality opponent in Nate Marquardt. He didn't beat him amazingly, but he beat him, and if we're gonna consider this any sort of a sport, I think he's earned a title shot. And he's the last man to beat Anderson Silva.
He is, although he didn't really...
No, don't say the rest of the part. He's the last man to beat Anderson Silva.
He did beat Anderson Silva. He holds a win over Anderson Silva.
Doesn't matter how.
Yeah, I'm not gonna get into that. Vitor Belfort was also a UFC champion once.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, he deserves it. He's been around, like, close to a title for years and has always kind of lost right when it was about to be time for him to get the nod to become the number one contender. And this was a fight that was billed as such. And really, there's no one else more deserving. I mean, it's pretty laughable at this point that Vitor Belfort's getting a title shot because he still hasn't gotten that win at 185 yet, but you know, who else is Anderson Silva gonna fight? The one person who gave him a good fight is on suspension now.
Yes. Pending appeal.
Pending appeal, but you know, appeals don't tend to really do anything.
There's not a good track record with MMA athletes protesting or appealing rulings by athletic commissions, in that the athletic commissions tend not to believe them.
Yeah.
Or even if they admit to it, they don't get leniency for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the Sean Sherk case, for example. You know, I'm not going to say whether or not he did drugs because I don't know. Right. He looks like he might, but you know, that's purely speculation.
He's in good shape.
Yeah, and he's got he had incredible abs.
His nickname's the Muscle Shark.
Yes, but he did a lot of stuff to prove his innocence, including taking a lie detector test.
Right.
Which, you know, he could just be a sociopath, because those people can pass those pretty well, I hear. But I would assume he's not a sociopath, and he did pass it, so I don't know. But he still had to, you know, go through his full year suspension, so I wouldn't expect to see Chael Sonnen back anytime in the immediate future.
Right.
So Vitor Belfort will fight Anderson Silva.
Yes, and the winner of that will likely take on Yushin Okami unless Dana White changes his mind again, which he's done. But
he has done. But
and I've just basically been assuming that Anderson Silva is going to win that fight, and I know Vitor Belfort punches hard and he punches fast, so he could win it in the first 2 minutes, but if he doesn't win it then, Anderson Silva is going to remain the middleweight champion.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on that one. In the fact that Vitor Belfort has one explosion in him per fight.
So it could be later. After, it could be not necessarily in the first 2 minutes.
And I see it being very possible that both fighters will just kind of hang back for a significant amount of time in that fight. Because they both seem to be pretty interested in doing that sometimes. Anderson Silva, I mean, even when he was destroying fools, he was never, like, coming straight at him in the first few minutes of a fight. He was always kind of, like, checking out, seeing what they're doing, unless they're just Chris Liebening and, you know, running straight into it.
Mm-hmm.
He usually kind of likes to wait and see. And, you know, if Vitor Belfort doesn't just decide to explode all over the place right away, then we could see it, you know, maybe hit a second, third round.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Vitor Belfort might explode then, because he's random, man. He's like a freaking time bomb. And then sometimes he doesn't explode at all. And then you're just kind of left unsatisfied, like, damn, Vitor.
Yeah. I'm just throwing this out there, I guess. If it is Belfort who faces off with Yushin Okami for the middleweight title, Yushin Okami might end up being middleweight champ. I like his chances against Belfort a lot better than I like his chances against Silva.
Well, I could say that about most people.
That's not to say I don't give Yushin Okami any chance against Anderson Silva, but clearly if your options are Anderson Silva or anybody else, you have better chances against anybody else.
Yeah, and Vitor Belfort is a guy that, you know, is pretty beatable. As is evidenced by the fact that he has been beaten many times.
Right, well, and Okami's got a good style for him. You know, clinch up or get him, do a takedown, out-wrestle him a little bit, you know, kind of neutralize him on the feet, perhaps.
Yeah, and he's looked really good since dropping to 185 so far, but, I mean, Vitor Belfort has always been that kind of guy that, you know, would, like, get a whole lot of really good wins and, you know, people would be all over him and then all of a sudden, like, oh, he sucks, apparently. Can't win anything. And then he'll make a comeback and get a whole lot of wins and then he'll lose them all. And he always seems to drop a weight class each time because he started out as a heavyweight back in the 90s and it wasn't until Randy Couture came and beat him and then he dropped down. You know, went to Japan for a while, then came back at light heavyweight and won the title and then got beaten up and went away. And now he's a middleweight. So expect to see him at welterweight next decade sometime.
Be crazy. Get an immediate title shot against George St. Pierre.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll talk about some of the other fights on this card, but I just kind of had a thought that might be interesting to discuss is, you know, some of the stuff I just saw online, speculation, I don't know if it was, you know, just on, like, you know, blogs or whatever, or discussion boards, but the idea that in announcing that the winner of this fight will get a title shot, does the UFC or Dana White kind of shoot themselves in the foot by kind of making it, like, almost predestining that fight to be boring because the fighters at that point are more concerned about just winning the fight, you know, doing what it takes to win the fight as opposed to going for an exciting finish, that sort of thing, because they know, no matter what, if they win that fight, they get a title shot, so they'd be more careful and maybe fight more carefully in the hopes of winning the fight, as opposed to taking more risks. And
that's an excellent point, because not only does that mean that we, as the fan viewer, know that the winner of this match has a title shot, but I never thought about that the fighter also knows that, too.
Right, so the guy
plays it a little closer to the chest.
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, there is something to be said for that. But at the same time, that I think depends greatly on the style of the fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Try telling Shane Carwin, for example, that he'll get a title shot if he wins a fight and see if he tries to drag it out and, you know, play slowly. I think a fighter is more likely to play to their strengths when you say something like that. But not every fighter is going to want to fight to a decision. A lot of times it's, you know, put this fool away as fast as I can so he can't do anything to me.
It's the only chance you might have, right. Okay.
So,
but maybe you meant more with this last fight.
Right. Well, and you know, I guess in Yushin Okami's case, it happened to, like, playing to his strengths happened to be, you know, working his jab and neutralizing Nate Marquardt and, you know, going for takedowns, that sort of thing. So it's not like he really didn't change up his game plan that much anyways. But I was kind of curious what you guys thought about that.
You know what they should do? Or this is a horrible idea, and they totally shouldn't do it. But after every single fight, a big buff guy in a suit and sunglasses comes out to the octagon with a briefcase, and they open up the briefcase, and after every match, there's a surprise. And sometimes it's like, you know, $100,000 or something like that, or a puppy, or a contract for the for a title match. So every single fight, forever, there's something in it for you, but you don't know what it is.
And there's a big buff guy in a suit.
Yeah. Why's it got to be a buff guy in a suit?
It just has for the presentation, okay? It could be Dana White. He's buff, isn't he?
Why couldn't they just, like, lower the suitcase down from the rafters on a chain or something?
And they have to climb a ladder for it? Look, I didn't say it was a good idea.
You actually specifically said it was not, yes. Yeah. Okay, well.
But, I mean, like, how else are you going to promote something like that? You know, you kind of have to... Right. Even if you change your mind, you know, afterwards, which they are wont to do, then, you know, you need some sort of promotion in there. So that's what I brought to the table, Dana White. Now call me an F-tard.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're getting with this, Tobin, especially since the two fights that Dana White has made such a promise for in recent memory were this fight and the John Fitch fight against Thiago Alves, which was also an extremely boring affair. Right. But once again, you know, that's...
But in that case, it was actually even a more dominant performance in John Fitch's case.
But that's just also how John Fitch rolls. Mm-hmm. He's another fighter that playing to his strengths is, you know, take down and do the grind, embracing the grind.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that all depends on the kind of guy that you're going to, you know, get in there. I think you could have told... like Dan Hardy and Carlos Condit, that their fight was the number one contender fight, and they probably would have fought exactly the same.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Good talk, guys.
Good talk, guys.
So, and what other, Greg, what other fights stood out to you on this card again? Like, I don't want to break the whole thing down just because there's another card to preview, and we can maybe even talk WEC, but I was impressed with Dennis Seaver. I mean, not only his stand-up, obviously, but, you know, surprise, he's got a decent ground game.
Yeah, he made Andre Winner look like a loser.
Oh, snap. How long have you been holding that
one? That actually just came right now.
Nice. Right off the top of his dome, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, got a nice knockdown in the first round and was able to capitalize with a pull off a rear naked choke and even trapped one of Winner's arms with his legs. So
yeah.
Good technique there.
Well done, Seaver.
Yeah, and you know, Dennis Seaver is one of those guys who just always kind of flies under the radar. But I think we're going to have to start taking, not that we didn't take him seriously before, but I mean, going to have to start looking at him as like a... I don't know, can we call him a contender? Or
I think that's a bit premature, especially since he has that recent loss over Pearson.
Right, yeah, I guess, you know, you look at his record, and, you know, anytime he's come up against, you know, kind of higher-level competition, he has fallen short. But, yeah, I mean, his last, well, like, five out of his last six fights have been wins, that sort of thing, yeah. Five and one in his last six fights, but, you know, one of those is just, you know, earlier this year. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little early to call him a contender, but, you know, you could maybe put him in the up-and-comer status, even though, you know, he's been around for a while. I mean, his first UFC fight was way back at UFC 70.
70, yes.
So, I mean, he's been around, but, you know, he's kind of stepping up his game these days, you could say.
Well, I guess it'd be part of two of his losses came pretty, you know, 2 years ago, and they were against, you know, Gray Maynard and Melvin Gallard, and, I mean, but all of those fighters have clearly evolved since then, but, you know, I think there's maybe been enough time that people might not have those as obviously as fresh in their head. And
yeah, but with Seaver, I think it's early to say something like that. And also, I mean, you look at the people that he's been up against. Spencer Fisher, He's good, but you know he hasn't really been tearing it up as of late.
Yeah, he's definitely faded over the last year or so.
And then I think this is good of Seaver to get this win over Winter. I expected otherwise, but Winter hasn't really set the world on fire either.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a good win, but it's not like an amazing win. And then he's got that loss to Pearson. And then, you know, you look at these other guys, and, you know, like, I know who Paul Kelly is, but, you know,
yeah, it's a solid who are
those
opponent.
Who are those other guys,
Dale
you know?
Hart, Nate Moore.
Just some guys.
Yeah. So, all right, but, yeah, definitely, at least he showed some improvement, I guess, yes. Or evolved fight game.
Yeah, you know, he's stepping up, which is always good, and he won for his hometown crowd. I don't know if it's hometown, but he's German. And
right, yeah, I think German by way of Russia or something like that, so.
Oh, yeah.
But, Good
cool.
on him. Gave the German fans some excitement there. You know, impressed with Amir Sadala. It was kind of not necessarily a repeat of the Phil Baroni fight, but it wasn't nearly as bad as a beatdown over Peter Sabata. But, you know, no question that Amir Sadala won that fight and just, you know, showed good stand-up and just kind of, you know, imposed his will throughout the fight.
Yeah, I mean, he had some good, crisp, technical striking, but I think Amir Sadala may have the curse of the Forrest Griffin syndrome, where he's a good technical fighter with cardio that can go, but doesn't really have the finishing power, and perhaps, you know, could be susceptible to being finished. I mean, Forrest Griffin had a pretty good run when he beat Shogun and Rampage, but he doesn't really have the ability to put people away at
right.
the higher level, and usually people have the ability to put him away. So it's always kind of like, how long can Forrest last before he gets knocked out kind of deal? And I could see a similar thing with Amir. Granted, he's really early in his career, and power is apparently something that is developable sometimes. Looking at Cain Velasquez as an example. He showed very little power early on in his career and is now knocking fools senseless.
Yeah.
So the verdict is not in yet on Amir, but looks good. Another win over another guy.
Yes.
And I mean, this is only like a sixth official MMA fight.
Right. So I believe he's now 4-2 overall in professional MMA. I guess the other thing, it wasn't even that great of a fight necessarily, but Dwayne Bang Ludwig took a split decision over Nick Oshipsack. And I wasn't a terrible decision. I was kind of surprised. I was really prepared to score that fight a draw because I think Oshipsack won the first two rounds, and then
he got his ass kicked the third round.
Yeah, did you see that fight?
I didn't see it.
He stopped fighting. Joe Rogan was basically speculating he'd gotten hurt pretty bad or something like that. But I mean, you know, he just kind of turtle up on the feet. And then eventually just kind of like, if he had the space, basically just walked away and reset without, you know, even...
Damn, he did the Caleb Starnes move?
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't even running away, though. It was just like this weird kind of, he'd drop his hands and just back up. It looked like, or maybe he'd just been like dazed or something like that. He just didn't look all there, but he was really like lethargic in that last round.
Huh.
And I was, you know, but I thought I thought he probably won those first two rounds. So again, I was prepared for a draw. But yeah, it was just bizarre. But I mean, Ludwig looked good, except for, you know, he couldn't finish a guy in the third round who had no desire to be there. Is the only, you know, criticism I'd have at that point. But Ludwig got the win, so good on him. But yeah, I haven't been able to find it online at this point. You know, whether Oshipsack was hurt or what, but I don't think he's had gas problems and cardio problems in the past, so it was just really, really a bizarre thing to see.
I don't know.
But I don't know. Any other thoughts you had on the card, Greg, before we talk about, I guess we should probably preview UFC 123? Or
let's get to it.
Yeah. All right. So
UFC 122.
It was an event that happened. Not very exciting, but...
It was free.
It was free.
Yeah, so quit your bitching.
Right. Well, and I was listening to another podcast, and they were commenting, pointing out... Sorry.
I'm kidding.
They were commenting, I think it was one of the Sherdog ones, but they were just commenting on the idea that, you know, the UFC and MMA in general is still being judged by an entertainment standard, which you don't necessarily get in other sports. And in you know, so it's kind of odd that we're still, maybe not odd, but, you know, just something to take note of, that we're still at that point in MMA where, you know,
yeah,
like
there's
boring
nothing
football
else vested,
games,
though.
Right, but boring football games happen all the time. Boring baseball games happen all the time. If you're like, well, this is bad for the sport. This is, what a bad, you know.
Right,
just,
well, they have a
happens.
Stake. I mean, they have a stake city-wise, you know what I mean? Like, there's no real representatives of anybody. It's just one individual, mm-hmm. you know, going against another. Unless, you know, you go for the USA versus, and then...
Also,
know.
We're paying for a majority of MMA events, perhaps, right. could be it as well. But, yeah, just something to make note of, I thought was kind of interesting to bring up, so...
Yeah, I mean, there's boring football events, and...
Right, but no one cares. Like, it happens, and then people don't care, I mean...
Well, yeah, there's a whole lot of football events, though. And there's, like, 15 football events every week.
Right.
So, you know, if one game's super boring, you can just, like, turn on another one.
So it's just a volume thing? Yeah, I got you.
A little bit of both. Maybe.
Yeah.
Excellent theory.
And then, you know, the Super Bowl is boring. It's like, well, at least they've got good commercials. Until recent years, when the commercials started to suck.
I'm pretty sure they never had good commercials.
One other thing just to mention, of course, because we like to complain about it. Once again, tape delayed overseas event. Sure would be nice if we could get... And we know the reasons why. You know, you get the primetime advertising if you tape delay it, blah, 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 blah. Logistical issues and airing something on Spike TV during the day. I get it. It sure would be nice if we're going to treat MMA as a sport to, you know, have it air live. And, you know, do a second broadcast or something in primetime.
Well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you on this one just because, like, they tape delay the Olympics so we can watch
right.
them.
But those are available. You can like you can find those online. And this, I mean, I agree with you on that point. But I mean, they have in recent years made strides due to people complaining to broadcast the events live online as they happen at certain markets, or you know, broadcast the events as they're happening on TV or on the cable network, and then rebroadcast them or that. To a certain extent, during the primetime cast. So, but no, I agree. Yeah, I mean, people obviously can deal with it and get over it, but sure would be nice. I mean, because I'd make that same point for the Olympics. Sure would be nice if I could watch Olympic events live when they happen.
Yeah, but most of us aren't up at 4 a.m. wanting to watch some freaking figure skating.
You guys aren't hardcore, man. You aren't real fans.
We love America. We're here.
Also, I mean, UFC was on at like noon or something like that. Something like that big.
Oh, yeah, on a Saturday.
Woo, that's hangover time.
Yeah, it's still hangover, man. Yeah, I don't know how to handle that. Yeesh.
So, what do we got going on?
UFC 123 next weekend.
Yeah, and, you know, not to spoil my my pick, but the fact that Steven Seagal has reportedly been at the training camp of Lyoto Machida might swing my vote a little bit in the main event.
Punch it the other way? Look, I like Steven Seagal. I've seen several episodes of Steven Seagal, Lawman. He plays the blues guitar very well.
Have you seen any of his movies?
Yeah, I've seen several of them. I'm talking about the new stuff, bro.
Right.
Stuff he wants to promote.
Okay.
But, yeah, he's there.
It's not a talk show. We don't have to, like, shill for him.
Okay.
Right. So, let's actually talk about the card in a relevant manner, perhaps.
On deadly ground.
Yes.
Exit wounds. Under siege 2.
How many did they make? Did they make 3?
Gosh, I hope not. Hopefully they stopped at 2 mercifully.
Yeah. So we want top down or bottom up?
Yeah, that seems the way to do it. Top down.
All right, so in the main event of UFC 123 on pay-per-view this Saturday... Quinton Rampage Jackson, Lyoto the Dragon Machida. It's going down, man. What do you guys think, Greg?
You know, like, this is a really interesting fight for me. Stylistically, I see no reason why Rampage would win this fight other than a lucky punch.
But he punches hard, man.
He punches hard, but Lyoto's elusive. So I don't see him getting hit a whole lot, most likely. Rampage doesn't like to check leg kicks, and Machida really likes to throw leg kicks. So I could see that ended up, you know, being pretty devastating for the legs of Rampage. I would predict most of the time that this fight would be Machida winning Matador style.
Mm-hmm.
As Rampage comes charging in, Machida is like, leg kick, now I move over here while you swing into the air.
Yeah.
But Machida just got knocked out for the first time, and you never know how somebody's going to react to that.
Right.
So there's a huge question mark over Machida's head right now. How is he going to handle that he just got knocked out, especially when he's going up against a guy who probably hits harder than the guy who just knocked him out? So it's really hard for me to pick a winner here. I would probably go with Machida anyway, just because I think the style plays nicely for him, and you never really know where Rampage's head is at either, because he's kind of crazy too.
Yeah. Yeah, I also favor Machida in this fight for a lot of same reasons, and of course Rampage does have a good shot in this fight. He's a very good boxer. Hits very hard, but his style is a bit different than Shogun, who beat Machida last. I mean, he doesn't seem to necessarily rush in as much, which you think would be a favorable asset in a fighter, because you don't leave yourself open as much. But at the same time, I mean, that's really seems to be how Shogun got Machida in their last fight, is he was able to just kind of overwhelm him coming in with strikes, that sort of thing.
Yeah, he was able to draw Machida into a firefight.
Right,
which is where he beat him.
And Rampage might be looking to do the same thing, but I just don't see him maybe bull rushing as much immediately,
Yeah, well, and also Shogun did a lot of using leg kicks to set up his attacks.
Yeah,
which is why he lost the first fight, because Cecil Peoples doesn't score leg kicks.
As we all know, leg kicks don't win fights.
Yes, but they can set up victories. But Rampage he's not kicking anybody's legs.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, being the three rounder, we might see a decision here. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Machida maybe capitalize on some counter strikes. Maybe in the second round or something, catch Rampage.
I could see the TKO being possible. I wouldn't expect him to knock him out cold.
Yeah.
Rampage has got a good chin, but I could see him wearing him down and getting kind of the attrition knockout thing going on. But, yeah, I mean, this is a hard fight to call. This would have been a lot easier if it wasn't for that last fight of Machida's.
Right. Matt Collins.
I would have to go for the underdog on this one, which is Rampage Jackson. To the normal fan, I think that they're probably going for Rampage, however. Like, he's the favorite.
He was in the A-team.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in name recognition and in popularity, he's probably
he was
the favorite.
Favorite, yeah.
But I would say that if you really break it down and you look at it in a more technical way, that he's the underdog. Not by much, but by enough. Mm-hmm. So I think that that Rampage needs it enough, and stuff like that, like those really arbitrary type of emotional attitudes, really affect him, I think, more than a lot of other fighters. So I think he's going to pull it out.
He is an emotional guy, I'll give you that, and that could play a big role. And he has, some recent interviews talked about how disappointed he was after that Rashad Evans fight. Who knows if that will play an extra role in his motivation.
There may not be any other distractions going on right now. He seems like a guy that could be distracted quite easily. So I'm going to go for a Rampage on this one.
All right. So Steven Seagal not playing a factor in this fight? Do you think he's going to be in Machida's corner? That'd be great.
I think so.
He was in Anderson Silva's corner, wasn't he? Yeah, for the Chael Sonnen fight.
Great. That's awesome. I hope.
Yeah, he hangs out, and I think where they're from, he's probably like a legitimate, big deal. And he's a very skilled fighter and everything, but he doesn't quite have that star mystique here in the States that he may abroad. So I'm thinking that he's more of a spiritual guide for these guys, than anything else right now.
Well, if English isn't your first language, it might not be easy to tell how bad of an actor he is.
Yes.
So I could see how that'd be like, ooh, he's got good moves, and, he plays a tough guy. Cool.
Steven Seagal legitimately has some martial arts background.
He absolutely does.
But it's in Aikido, which sucks.
Right, yeah. It's like, is that relevant to, modern mixed martial arts? And
Aikido is all about, like, here, let me grab your wrist and I'll throw you over there!
Alright, so
on we go.
Yeah. Steven Seagal, not the X Factor in the main event.
I would think not.
Yeah. Co-main event, the rubber match between BJ Penn and Matt Hughes.
Damn!
BJ Penn returning once again to welterweight. And two guys who have had their motivations questioned in the past.
One of them kind of admitting to not being very motivated either.
Well, they both have at one point. I mean,
Matt Hughes was going to be hunting this year, this time of year.
Yeah.
He wasn't looking for another fight until they were like, hey, we'll give you a bunch of money and BJ Penn. So he had to reorganize his hunting schedule to take this
fight. Guy.
And BJ Penn talks a good game at times and then looks like he just woke up when he enters the ring. Sometimes in recent fights, perhaps.
Yeah, and in some fights in the past as well.
Yeah, that being said, I think BJ Penn's gonna beat Matt Hughes, and you know, of course, they're each at 1-1 in their trilogy, with this being the third fight. But I think BJ Penn overall as a fighter still has more to offer. Matt Hughes is still a very good fighter, but I think he's more on the again in that twilight period of his career where BJ Penn's definitely dropped off quite a bit, obviously dropping two in a row to Frankie Edgar, but I think he still compete with the very best in his division, whereas Matt Hughes I think would not look great against the very best. But I guess the X factor here is kind of the weight. BJ Penn moving up, and that's been an issue for him in the past. It sounds like he's coming in light though. He's not, just adding on the pounds to make, the exact weight.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, they interviewed him on the UFC 122 card, and he said, he's coming a couple pounds under even, so. See how that plays a factor, maybe to keep a speed.
Yeah, keep the speed and the flexibility, not try to overpower Matt. That's a tough fight to call. Matt Hughes, it's really hard to tell where he's at these days.
Yeah.
Because, he was on top of the world for such a long time. He's still one of the most dominant fighters in the history of his sport. If you look at his run from, up until the second meeting with George St. Pierre. And he had a rough patch, but admittedly, those were three losses in four fights, two of which were to George St. Pierre, and the other one was to Thiago Alves, who is basically the number three welterweight in the world.
Yep.
So, I don't really see a whole lot of... he didn't look good, but he could have looked a lot worse. Especially since Thiago Alves was several pounds overweight for that fight. So,
yeah.
That makes it even less of a crime to lose to him. And Matt Hughes kind of dropped off the face of the planet for a while. I think it was another year before he fought again.
Just about...
And he barely got by Matt Serra. It was a really close fight. But then he's kind of been on this retirement tour lately. He fought Renzo Gracie and Ricardo Almeida and has been looking better and better each fight.
Yeah.
Granted, Renzo Gracie was, certainly past his prime, but Ricardo Almeida is a guy who's still pretty relevant.
He's a good fighter, yeah.
He lost, but he was in a number one contendership match for middleweight. Just a couple years ago, he fought Patrick Cote, and the winner of that fight went on to fight Anderson Silva. So, he's a relevant guy.
Yeah.
And, he got choked out, which is supposed to be his specialty, by a wrestler. So, Matt Hughes is hard to tell where he's at. And then BJ Penn is kind of in a weird situation, too. He was looking amazing in 2009. Take away the George St. Pierre loss just because he was fighting George St. Pierre, so that doesn't really count. But, his win over Kenny Florian was very impressive, and over Diego Sanchez, good grief.
Yeah.
And you don't even need to talk about that. That was, that was a heinous act, the ass kicking that he unleashed there. But then he lost two fights in a row to Frankie Edgar, who was, it was a big enough surprise the first time. And then you'd think he'd have all the motivation in the world for the rematch, and then he just got his butt kicked even harder the second time.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned BJ Penn talking a good game about how he's motivated, but he was talking about all kinds of motivation for the second Frankie Edgar fight. And
right, I just don't know if I believe, I said he talked a good game, I don't know if I believe him anymore.
Yeah. Because, he always says that. Yeah. It's like, yes, I used to have issues with motivation, but not anymore. It's like,
This time.
I've heard this
awesome.
Before.
Yeah.
This is really hard to say. Matt Hughes has got the size and the wrestling, but BJ Penn should have the striking and the jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Matt's not likely to get subbed when he's on top either. So it's all about the takedowns in this fight.
Yeah.
BJ Penn is extremely hard to get taken down. Man, it's a tough one.
All right.
Real tough one. I'm going to go with Matt Hughes just to be contrary. I'm going to go with Matt Hughes by decision.
Yeah.
Possible TKO in the third, but...
All right. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, and I kind of agree. BJ Penn's got a, you know, clear advantage on the feet. I mean, Matt Hughes is, you know, he handles himself well enough, but he's never looked, you know, he looked outstanding on the feet against Gracie. That was about it. Guy who's couldn't check leg kicks or anything. I mean, yeah, he's always, you know, standing, his striking game has never been Matt Hughes' strong point. And he's looked to improve that, of course, but, you know, I just don't think he's done enough or can do enough at this point to match up with the elite strikers.
Yeah, well, I mean, he can continue to improve that aspect of his game and use it for select fights, but This is not the fight that he's going to want to showcase his stand-up skills on.
Exactly.
Unless, of course, BJ Penn cracks a rib, like he did in their second fight, in which case Matt Hughes should go for the knockout this time instead of just taking him down like he did last time.
Yeah, so again, I think, you know, the X factors here are definitely BJ Penn's motivation and his gas tank again, because, you know, it seems when he fights up a weight class, he does tire out a little bit faster, maybe.
Oh, definitely. I think he's one of those guys that has to, like, work harder to make lightweight. Like, he can't show up to lightweight not in shape, it seems. Like, because every time he makes it to lightweight, even if he seems uninspired, as he did in the Frankie Edgar fights, he still fought five rounds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't imagine the BJ Penn that fought Matt Hughes the second time or George St. Pierre, you know, going for a full five-round fight without getting, you know, at least put in a compromising position where the fight would get stopped. He seems to have a pretty rock-solid chin where he's not going to get knocked out, but... You know, it could be like the second fight against Hughes where it's just unanswered blows until the ref jumps in.
Mm-hmm.
But he always seems to have that cardio at 155. At 170, it doesn't, you know, always seem to be there. But if he comes in light, you know, that could change it.
Maybe help. Matt Collins, break the tie.
I am not going to break the tie because either way, they're both in a place in their career where it's A... going to be a horrible fight. Very sluggish, very, you know, poke, poke, jab, jab, grind, grind type of thing. Or it could be the kind of awesome match where we don't see one of them again forever. Like, someone leaves completely humiliated or ruined and may not ever return to the octagon again. I hope for the latter. Probability is we'll see the first one.
Wow. So you're just not picking, huh?
Absolutely not. So do I have to? I would.
I guess you don't have to.
I would, I'll go for BJ.
Okay.
There. But. Either way, it's either going to be really good or really bad.
Right. Like, well, like, it's fine if you're like, well, I don't know who's going to win. It's a tough choice, but you're just like, it seemed like it wasn't so much of a tough fight that you couldn't call it. You're just like, I don't care.
Well,
I just want to do blood.
I wanted to emphasize the grandness of its potential.
Right, right, right.
Its potential grandness. Like, the fight itself.
Why do we got to pick fights anyways?
Exactly. Well,
I got you.
I mean, if you can see the big picture.
Right.
Then
you read that poetry book again. I understand.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. What is but one win or loss in a man's career?
What makes a man? Is it the woman in his arms? Just because she has big titties?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It seems about right to me.
Hey, so Aaron Simpson and Mark Munoz are fighting.
That's cool.
They're friends. I thought friends weren't supposed to fight.
Are they friends?
They train together, don't they?
Do they?
I thought they were the Arizona Combat guys.
No.
Arizona State? I'm really sure they, like...
Maybe they knew each other from wrestling back in the day, but I don't think they trained the same team. Friggin', Aaron Simpson trains with C.B. Dalloway and Ryan Bader and stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't think Munoz does. I think he trains with some cool people.
Why would you say it like that?
I'm
gonna look this up, because I'm really sure...
All right, that.
Not so much
up.
That I'm right, but I'm really sure you're wrong. That's really what motivates me in life, is to prove people wrong.
Okay, well, bring it on. I do know that Aaron Simpson trains with CB Dalloway, though.
Yeah.
Because they were making a big deal about that in one of his previous fights. And why don't you just look up who Munoz trains with?
What?
What are you doing?
I'm Googling. You talk.
Okay, I think Munoz is going to win this fight. But this is two big-time wrestlers going at it. Mm-hmm. I think Munoz trains with Black House, now that I think of it. He's with Anderson Silva and freaking Lyoto Machida. Yeah, Steven Seagal. So, unless, of course, Wikipedia proves me wrong, in which case I will refute Wikipedia because it's...
As you should, because it's Wikipedia. I'm just looking for some sources, you know.
Yeah. But, I think Munoz should take this. He's got more devastating ground and pound. Because his ground and pound is quite devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Simpson is a good wrestler. He might be able to keep him off of him. But, you know, I hope not. I would like to see Munoz get that ground and pound in because it's pretty cool looking.
All right.
I like to see it. I like Munoz. His last fight was a bit disappointing, but it was against Okami, who was pretty good.
Okami's not bad, apparently.
Apparently not. Maybe you should just look up Black House.
Okay, I don't know what Google will think of me if I do that. I don't like Google judging my search topics.
Okay, what do you think about this fight, Matt? Because clearly Tobin's preoccupied.
I'm preoccupied with finding facts.
Yeah, I really don't know. I don't have an opinion about it.
Now, Aaron Simpson is the guy who beat Tom Lawler that made you sad a long time ago.
I don't like him. He hurt Tom Lawler. if he beat Tom Lawler, he's pretty good, you know. Because Tom Lawler's pretty amazing, right, guys?
Yeah, but Tom Lawler did gas out in that fight because he burned like 3,000 calories in his entrance. Coming out to Who Let the Dogs Out by the Baja Man.
Yes, Tom Lawler has a good idea of showmanship, you know.
Yeah, you know, he said he's going to tone that down from now on.
Oh, I guess he should probably start winning some fights.
Winning fights.
Yeah.
He says he will still be funny, but he's not going to be so energetic until the fight starts
because he's
running out of energy.
Yeah.
But he can still have sweet mustaches.
That's good.
Okay, I'm looking at a headline at Watch Caleb Run, an MMA blog.
Okay.
Wow, is that an actual website?
Oh, yes it is. It's part of the SB Nation, which also is the Bloody Elbow.
Who's Caleb?
Caleb Starnes, in one of the worst fights in UFC history.
Oh, he was running away.
He's running.
The entire fight against Nate Quarry. I don't remember if you were there or not, but we watched
it
at Steve's house.
Very clever blog. Very clever.
He's the only person I've ever seen lose a fight 30-24. He had 3 10-8 rounds against him.
Wow.
He just ran away the whole fight. And then Nate Quarry did the retard fighting with the...
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
And then Caleb gave him the finger.
That punk Caleb. So what's Caleb Run say?
What? Headline, Aaron Simpson ready to brawl with good friend Mark Munoz at UFC 123.
Okay, I don't say they hate each other. I said they're not in the training partners right now.
Right. But, I mean, like, normally guys who are friendly or training partners, either way, have in the past... been adverse, perhaps, to fighting each other.
Well, yeah, and if only... But usually the guys that can throw that kind of sway around, you know, it's still your job, and you probably have to have some chops money-wise to be able to, you know, say who you can and can't fight.
Yeah, or to be a big draw, like a guy like George St. Pierre, where, you know, he's worth the UFC keeping around, even if he doesn't want to fight one of his buddies.
I mean, I would just like to point out that Dana White, like, fired John Fitch for a day. So, I mean, like, being really good or being a top contender doesn't necessarily have anything to do
with... Yeah, but that was because John Fitch didn't want to be in my sweet UFC video game.
Yeah, which I can see is way more important than fighting in real life.
Hey, you know what? I wanted to knock John Fitch out.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. He's un-knock-outable.
My record shows differently.
Right, but, I mean, John Fitch isn't even, like... on Dana White's, he's kind of already on his S list anyways.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like he wasn't in good favor with Dana White, you know. He didn't pull any sway with the big man or anything, so he's just kind of looking for an excuse to fire
him. Yeah, that's true. John Fitch, is the kind of, well, Dana White's not the one who rehired him.
Mm.
It was the Fertittas.
It was the voice of reason.
But, you know, Fitch is not the kind of guy who would get fired and would really be missed by a whole lot of people. Like, there would be a huge outrage on the mixed martial arts community if he just got completely fired. But, you know, like, for the people who actually buy pay-per-views, I think they would be like, who?
Oh, that boring guy who doesn't deserve to fight because he's boring, even though he wins all the time.
That guy who got beat up by GSP.
I hate MMA fans so much sometimes. I hate them. Hey, so,
They're like any other fan.
Okay, right. So only guys who win and are famous deserve to, like, have any say about their fight careers. I get it.
I'm not saying that that's what that they deserve that, but that's who gets that kind of special treatment.
I'm just saying, it does seem more of a rarity when we have teammates and or close friends. You know, even if it's not like a matchup like this, but you're like, oh, yeah, no. Like, John Jones has said he wouldn't want to fight guys in his camp.
Yeah.
It hasn't been proposed to him, but he's like preemptive. He's like, no, I wouldn't want to fight, like, you know, like Rashad Evans or something.
Almost seems like you'd want to fight your friends sometimes, unless it was for a really important match. I mean, like, the next person gets a title shot or something like that, you know. You could probably forgive and forget a little easier after a friend fight. Maybe. I don't fight my friends too often.
Because I would think all like the issues that have been bubbling up under the surface between your friendship would surface, and you would probably never be the same again afterwards.
Well, I would think also there would be the issue.
You slept with Chelsea.
there would also be the issue of the training camp. Like, you get two guys on the same team, is like, you know, with Rashad Evans and John Jones, for example, like, where is Greg Jackson going to be?
Right.
I mean, that to me is the big problem with those kinds of things. I could see Dana White be like, "Mwahaha, you will punch your friend in the face." But then it's like, going to be at their best when they're like...
Right, could you finish your friend if you, like, you know, had the option of knocking him out? Or would it just be you fight to a decision? Or yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not even getting at that. I'm just saying, like, their training camp. Are they going to be in the same camp?
Right.
Or are they going to split their camp? And if they split their camp, then they're not going to be fighting to their best potential. Even taking the friendship out of the deal, just the fact that, like, they don't have a full training camp. They've got a partial training camp because half their training camp is training somebody to fight them.
Right. I think a recent example of this with the training partners thing, not so much the friendship, but Tyson Griffin and Evan Dunham. They were both at Extreme Couture, and I believe Dunham left Extreme Couture to train for that fight, and then he returned afterwards.
Huh.
So, yeah, that's an option.
It's an option, but, you know, it sucks, like, having to leave your camp because
the camp
you build loyalties and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you join one camp as a, you know, one-off deal, and then, you know, they might not give you the best advice if you're just going to show up there for 2 months. They won't have much of an invested interest in you, and they won't know you as well as your own camp does. But, I mean, another recent example of a guy fighting a good friend of his, Tito Ortiz, just fought Matt Hamill.
Yeah.
And although Tito is also on Dana White's S list for being Tito, so I could see maybe being strong-armed into that one.
Yes. That is a potential. So, okay, after that, we settled the information, friendship, training partner issue. I forgot who you picked.
I picked Mark Munoz, man, because he's the bomb.
Yeah.
And Aaron Simpson sucks.
I agree with that. Sure, why not?
Fair and balanced. All right. I'll jump on your bandwagon. I like Mark Munoz in this fight.
Yeah, he's got brutal ground and pound.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's hard for me to like, you know, visualize the last fight, but Aaron Simpson just seems... Yeah, I don't...
He got beat up by Chris Lieben.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to think as far as like a more complete game goes, but I see Munoz as being the more like assertive fighter, if that makes sense, and being able to impose his will more, you know, and Aaron Simpson seems to be willing to kind of like stand and brawl a bit as well, but you know,
I think
if Munoz can get him down, then he's going to be able to kind of take care of business down there.
I think so. Aaron Simpson has got the wrestling in reverse thing going on where, you know, he's a wrestler who likes to bang and, you know, uses his wrestling to avoid getting taken down. But, you know, he's up against a very good wrestler as well. And it's not like Munoz doesn't have any stand-up either.
Yeah.
It may not be as technical, but he still hits hard. So. Yeah.
All right.
I'm going with Munoz.
All right, very good. Other notable fights on the card, George Soteropoulos versus Joe Lauzon.
What's this fight doing so far down the card?
I don't know. I mean, it's like four or five on the list.
But, yeah. What the heck?
Yeah, that's the.
It's more important than the Aaron Simpson Mark Munoz fight,
right? Well, this is the lineup we're looking at, like Sherdog or whatever like that. Their fight thing. So that might not necessarily be the order they air in, other than the main event and co-main event.
Yeah.
But I mean, this should be a fun fight. It's kind of surprising because George Sotiropoulos has been someone who's being tossed around as, you know, a potential contender at lightweight here pretty quick. And Joe Lozon, you know, is a good fighter, but I mean, he's coming off a long layoff and a loss, and just rebounded with a victory.
Yeah, but that was a sweet victory.
No, man, it was
that
insane.
Was one of the best beatdowns I'd ever seen.
Yeah,
on Gabe Rudiger. That was that fight where he just did everything that he wanted to do.
Oh, that was great. Yeah.
it was like everything. A squash. It was like a squash mat.
Yeah, basically. He did one of everything.
Yeah, and a pretty quick turnaround for Lozon, but of course, you know, he didn't take any damage.
Yeah.
In the Rudiger fight. I mean, he just fought on August 28th. Taking Rudiger out with submission, you know, just 2 minutes in.
Yeah, after whooping his ass for, you know, the previous 2 minutes, right. Doing whatever he felt like.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm amazed Rudiger got a second fight in the UFC after that.
Well, I think because the UFC does have a nice policy, because Rudiger was filling in, I believe, as an injury replacement.
Oh, was he?
And the UFC is pretty good for the most part about, like, hey, if you come in on short notice, we'll throw you another fight after this.
Yeah,
and thank you. You know, here's two paychecks.
Well, that makes sense then.
Yeah. But
yeah, that was pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, and how deflating for, I mean, not to get too much on it, but for Gabe Rudiger, who, you know, like, had been in the UFC before or on the Ultimate Fighter, and, you know, spent years off the grid and then fought his way back up, getting victories, you know, in other promotions, and then just gets, like, blasted.
You know, I've been watching the Ultimate Fighter lately, and I'm actually on Season 5 now, which features both of these guys.
Yeah.
And Gabe Rudiger got an enema to try and make weight.
Hey, you know, whatever it takes.
He was all crying about his weight, too. He's like...
Okay, if I had to take an enema, I'd be crying, too.
Well, no, he was crying before the enema. He's like, I don't understand. I've been working out really hard, and I keep weighing in, and I'm gaining pounds. And BJ Penn's like, hey, man, this guy's giving 100% in the gym. And some guy in the back of the van's like, yeah, he's giving 100% in the kitchen, too. Oh!
Snap.
Sick burn, bro.
So anyways, Joe Lozon coming off that fiery performance over Gabe Rudiger.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, and George Sotiropoulos, who...
is apparently the man these days.
Yeah, he's, again, like someone being tossed around as a potential title contender here, you know, shortly. And I would imagine, you know, should he win this, that's the thing, you know, I don't see this fight as a title eliminator in itself. And obviously with the merger of WEC now, we have Anthony Pettis or Ben Henderson getting the next shot at the lightweight title. But, I mean, it seems odd that, you know, again, Sotiropoulos, who's, you know, at that level of, you know, being one fight away from a contendership, fighting the guy who's just 1-1 in his last, you know, two fights and coming off like a year layoff or a long layoff for an injury.
Well, I think this may have something to do with that merger in that...
It's maybe like a space filler. Almost.
Yeah, and clearly nobody's getting a title shot in the immediate future. Like, nobody's going to earn a title shot.
Right.
Because they've already got their next two matches set up.
Yeah.
So, at this point, the UFC for the lightweight division is pretty much in build-up mode, I would think, where it's just like, let's start and put some contenders together. And whoever wins this fight, I would say... is a fight away from a title shot, probably. I mean, even Joe Lozon, who hasn't looked as impressive lately, other than that fight against Gabe Rudiger, which was extremely impressive.
Yes.
Just the fact that he would have taken out a guy like George Sotiropoulos, who's got this huge wave of momentum on his side, I would think would be a pretty good sign. So, I think this is more like some thinking down the line. I would expect... The UFC is hoping Sotiropoulos wins this because he's probably a more viable contender. But
I think he's had better success against better opponents, definitely.
Definitely. Especially in that fight in Australia against Joe Stevenson.
Yes.
Because that was quite an ass-kicking against a guy that, you know, I think most people thought was going to take him.
Right, a guy who's challenged for the title and... Joe Stevenson got a title shot, or did he?
He did get a title shot. He fought BJ Penn and bled all over the place.
Yeah, he did.
I actually just saw that fight again on UFC Ultimate Submissions. That was disgusting.
Yeah. That is not a fight you want to show to someone who's seen their first UFC fight or MMA fight.
Well, it depends on the person. Like, if they're like, I don't know, is this that stuff where people get kneed in the head?
This is pretty violent, right? You're like, no, it's, oh, God.
But if they're the kind of person who likes Jason movies, then you'd be like, hey, you should get into this sport. Here's BJ Penn fighting, you know, Joe Daddy.
Yeah. All right, so we've talked about, I guess, the build-up to this fight, but, Greg, who do you like in this fight, Soteropoulos or Lozon?
I like Soteropoulos.
Yeah?
I think he's really coming to his own. I remember seeing him on The Ultimate Fighter. That was right when I got cable, so that was the first season that I saw live. And he was very impressive up until losing to Tommy Spear. He was, to me, one of the favorites getting to the finals, fighting Mac Danzig. And, you know, he was pretty silently winning for a while there. He scored a bunch of wins against a bunch of other Ultimate Fighter alumni along the way. Mm-hmm. But he always made his way to the main card status and has continued looking very impressive. He's clearly improved his stand-up game as well. He's not just a submission guy anymore, and he's beaten some high level guys and really thoroughly dominated them. He just beat up Kurt Pellegrino in his last fight, and Pellegrino's not a top guy, but he's certainly solid.
He's Batman.
And other than that big knee that Pellegrino landed in the last second of the fight, he really didn't offer anything the whole fight. Mm-hmm. So Soteropoulos has looked very impressive. Lozon is good, but not, great. And we've already seen, we've seen Soteropoulos already against a few very good guys, and has pretty much dominated them. So unless Lozon steps his game up here, I don't think he's going to have a whole lot of success.
Yeah, I think Soteropoulos got a pretty good chance to get a submission, or decision. I don't see TKO or KO as coming, but yeah, I like him in this fight. It's been interesting. I guess online there's been a bit of talk about he's got the knee wraps and the ankle wraps, and I think since he's been wearing those, people have always, there's always been some are they too big? Are they too long? Do they give him a grappling advantage? Because you can't wear you can't wear the grappling pants and you can't have wraps and all of that. But people have just been kind of questioning. I think Lozon's kind of come out and not made a big fuss out of it, but he's just kind of pointing. It's like, yeah, I don't know if we'll check, see if he can have those or not, but I don't think it'll make a difference. I like Soteropoulos in this fight over Lozon. For what he does, I think he's better at what he does than what Lozon does, and especially the grappling department.
Yeah,
I think it could be trouble for Lozon if Soteropoulos gets him on the ground and works the submission game a bit.
One more edge I just thought of for Soteropoulos is that Call of Duty Black Ops just came out, and I know that Joe Lozon has been playing that game.
He's a big Call of Duty fan, so he might be distracted.
Yeah.
Sleep deprived.
And he says, he swears up and down that Call of Duty does not get in the way of his training, but that game just came out, and I have a hard time believing that he hasn't been playing it at all. So he might gas out in the third round.
A lot of X factors in this fight card,
Oh, yeah.
Seagal, Call of Duty.
And I hear that new Call of Duty is really good. I haven't played it, but
I'm not a big Call of Duty guy, unfortunately.
No?
But, no.
Well, I really liked some of the previous ones.
I asked a group of Marines recently if they played Call of Duty, and I realized, how awful a question that really was.
I actually know a lot of guys in the military who do play those kind of games.
Yeah, I was they're like Marines, though. They are the Call of Duty people in there. So
yeah, that's just a day on the job.
Yeah, I kind of said it, and I was like, oh, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, it's like asking someone, a musician, if they play Guitar Hero or something like that. But yeah.
And most of them probably do.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Lozon, just for the underdog vibe.
You're going to go for J-Lo.
J-Lo, baby.
Against the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, boy. Two really cool nicknames.
Yeah. You know, other fights on this card, Phil Davis, Tim Bosch. I like Phil Davis in that fight. He's still developing as a light heavyweight prospect. Again, a guy with phenomenal wrestling. Haven't seen a bunch out of his stand-up game, something I'm sure he's been working on. But, you know, I think Mr. Wonderful has what it takes to, you know, keep Bosch down and, you know, work ground and pound. You know, maybe you know, I forgot until I just looked at his record here, but, you know, he threw out that pretty wicked anaconda choke over Alexander Gustafsson back at UFC 112.
That was pretty sweet.
And I think that was a pleasant surprise for a lot of people because, you know, I guess at that point we didn't know much about Phil Davis, but he seemed like that kind of, you know, just like the wrestler ground and pound guy.
Yeah.
At least at that point.
His fight against Brian Stann was extremely dominating, but, you know, he didn't really do a whole lot other than wrestle.
Yeah.
So that it was good to see him do something else. I was noticing real quick on his record, this is his fourth fight this year. He's been pretty active.
He's a busy man.
Yeah, he's got some...
Good for him.
Some stuff to do.
That's what I like to see, though. I like to, you know, if you're not injured, and, I mean, you know, I like to... Obviously, as a fight fan, you want to see guys fight often, and, you know, so you get to see more fights.
Yeah, and I really like Tim Boach's fight against... some guy.
It must have been really good.
David Heath, I think it was, a long time ago.
Yeah. UFC 81.
Fight was sweet. He kept doing the front kick to the gut.
Yeah.
And Heath was like, ow, my gut, you know? Yep. I didn't really have anything for it. And then all of a sudden, Boach just kind of like grabbed him and threw him over in the corner and then punched him a whole lot. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it was
but,
TKO, slam, and punches.
Oh, is that what it says?
That's what the fight finder at SureDog has it listed.
Well, that's exactly what happened. He threw him in the corner and punched him.
Yeah, and he's coming off a win over Todd Brown at UFC 117.
Nice. But yeah, he hasn't been too impressive since then in the UFC, which is a bummer because, you know, he really had me behind him after that fight. So that fight was the bomb. I think Phil Davis is probably going to win this fight.
Yeah. Is worth noting, I mean, you know, obviously, Bosch having a more lengthy career in MMA. He has fought stiffer competition, obviously, but, I mean, as far as... He hasn't necessarily done well against stiffer competition, but he's fought, you know, guys like Vladimir Matyushenko, Matt Hamill, Jason Brills. So he's had, you know, he's got a good resume, but, again, you know, he hasn't, again, won any of those fights that I mentioned.
And those guys are all wrestlers.
Yeah.
And he's fighting a wrestler.
Right. But I think this is a good, you know, Boach is a good fighter and a good person for, you know, to test Davis out to see if he's, you know, ready for another step up in competition. And, you know, I like the slow burn they're doing with him. I think, you know, I think maybe because he doesn't have that flashy style like someone like a John Jones has, people haven't been clamoring like, oh, let's see Phil Davis, like, thrown in there right away. But, you know, I think he could be a contender down the line, you know, I don't even think next year, but, you know...
Maybe the year after?
Keeps building, yeah. You know, the slow build, I like it. And I think as he kind of slowly adds to his game and works, you know, on improving his, you know, submission game maybe and the striking. But he's got a pretty good upside, I think.
Right on.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking at Tyson Griffin against Nick Lentz undercard. You know, I know Tyson Griffin's coming off that loss to Takanori Gomi, but he's been kind of a mainstay for UFC main cards. I'm surprised.
Yeah, I think that is that's probably because I believe Spike is there in the prelims. So let me double check on that. But I would imagine that's probably a Spike prelim fight.
Well, I mean, I don't expect this to be a particularly exciting fight because I guess Nick Lentz's last fight against Andre Winner was one of the most notoriously boring fights in recent memory.
It was not fun. I think it was one of the first ones that, like, lost viewership.
Yeah. So I wouldn't think they would want that to be a airing on Spike, but, you know, what do I know? I'm just a podcaster.
You're just a guy.
I'm just a guy with a microphone.
Right.
As opposed to if it's on the pay-per-view where they already have your money.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know,
it's like, where are you going now, sucker? I got your money.
When you're on Spike TV
before
the show, like, that's when you need to put some exciting fights on to be like, see, this is what UFC is all about.
Buy it, bitches! MMA Junkies fight card lineup has it as an unaired prelim.
Oh.
So, but I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean we won't see it because, you know, Spike TV's prelims, they only schedule officially two fights in.
Yeah.
But we usually see three or four. And I would imagine, you know, depending on how it goes, we might see Tyson Griffin, Nick Lentz show up. I like Griffin in that fight. Lentz certainly has demonstrated he can control an opponent, keep him...
he can hump your leg really well.
That's one way of putting it. I would go with neutralize an opponent with his wrestling. And, I mean, you know, I heard an interview with him recently, and I don't think he was, like, you know, proud or thrilled that, you know, that's the way the fight played out. But, you know, you got to get that win. And
Got to make that money.
So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a game plan of his. Like, I'm going to fight Boren and blink at this guy. But, you know, it happened to be the way it panned out, at least in his last fight against Andre Winner.
But, you know, Andre Winner is a really good stand-up guy, so... Yeah. You know, maybe you don't want to play with that fire. I can see that. And, you know, I think he was pretty new to the UFC. Was he?
I guess he's been in the UFC for a little bit.
Yeah, for the last year or so.
But, you know, that's his biggest opponent in the UFC. So I can see, you know, the nerves, being scared.
Yeah.
Hugging him, you know, cuddling a
little
bit.
It's a legitimate strategy. I'm just throwing it out there. No, but I do like Tyson Griffin in the fight.
Yeah, Tyson Griffin's pretty good, despite the fact that he got knocked out by Gomi.
Right. I don't think Lentz has as much as a diverse game to offer against Griffin as someone like Evan Dunham. I spaced out his name twice in the same night. You think I'd be able to remember it after I forgot the first time? But yeah, like Evan Dunham had you know good stand up as well as a you know pretty solid ground game where he could challenge Griffin at multiple like you know in multiple facets. Whereas I don't think Nick Lentz at this point really has that where it's. I think we are going to see Nick Lentz going for, you know, the takedown and trying to stifle Griffin on the ground. And I think Griffin will probably get the best of him, maybe stopping that takedown or, you know, just being able to have some success standing against Nick Lentz.
All right. Now, there's one other fight that I think deserves mention. But first, I think we should even, you know, say, like, do we want to have an over-under for, like, how many days out from the competition Caro Parisien will pull out?
Yeah, welcome back to the UFC, Caro Parisien. He's fighting Dennis Hallman on the card. I think Caro Parisien probably wins this fight, provided everything is in proper order come fight time. But yeah, I mean, Caro Parisien has a well-documented history of, you know...
being loony?
that is one way to put it, certainly. But I believe he was actually, you know, diagnosed with some sort of stress issue.
Anxiety?
Yeah, anxiety. That was the word I was looking for. But yeah, you know, he's
so
pulled out.
Being loony is what we call it.
Sure, yes. This is me trying to cover my ass objectively, whereas...
Yeah, I don't have a journalism degree.
Right,
he's
exactly.
A freaking nut.
Yeah. Go for it. Yes.
All right, but, you know, he's a fighter. You know, I think that's not a great place to have, you know, stress disorders.
Yeah, he
after
should be
a
an
fight,
accountant.
You probably feel great. That's probably why he fights, because it's like the first time after he gets that first clock in the head and everything just kind of clears up. Like, that's the only sense of peace he gets in his life. And after that, it's all just like, you know, his head's going a mile a minute.
Tell us more, Dr. Collins.
Well, you know, I'm a very empathetic person. I
right.
can get inside somebody's
if
head.
He's scared, he should be fighting. Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty natural to get nervous, and this is more than
and he has a disorder
is like
of her nerve.
Issues.
Yes. So yeah. He's going into a fight. So that would probably stress him out a bit.
Right, but I mean, you have an anxiety issue, like going to your job at a desk might stress you out. So it's not like
I'm not saying that this is like the complete wrong. You know, I mean, yeah, it affects everybody in their own special way. I'm just saying that's probably why he's a fighter and why he's been known to cancel a few fights.
Yeah,
is because I'm sure there's not a whole lot of things that are more stressful than going out onto a stage and performing for people or, you know, being an athlete whose job it is to potentially have life-scarring, you know, injuries done to you. Yes.
Hell yes.
Got
it.
So, I win. Were we arguing?
I don't know. I think we were just making points. But,
yeah.
If you want to paint it in the black
yes,
and white.
Yes, you win the internet, Matt.
Yeah. FTW.
Yeah. If you guys, listeners, don't know what we're talking about, Carl Parisian, most recently, I think the big blow-up with the UFC that led to his dismissal was pulling out 2 days before his scheduled fight with Dustin Hazlett at UFC 106.
Poor Dustin.
And Dana White, in a surprise move, was very upset and vocal about it.
Oh, man. I did not see that coming at all.
See, there's that journalism degree coming in for some good humor.
Carol Parisian has effed over the UFC, the fans, and his opponent again. Triple exclamation point. He will not be fighting Saturday or ever again in the UFC. Double exclamation point. White posted to his million followers on Twitter. Million plus at this point.
Yeah. Oh, he went on a whole tangent on that. Like I was following that stream. Like what?
And that's some righteous anger, I think. You know, you have a fighter pull out two days before. It's kind of a big issue. But surprisingly, again, Dana White normally keeps every promise he makes. Carol Parisian is back in the UFC.
Well, you know, we still haven't seen Paul Daly come back yet.
Yes. So, but you know, I like Carol Parisian in this fight. I don't know. I mean, we got to keep in mind this is a guy who had a title shot lined up. And I believe it was an injury that kept him out?
Yeah, or, you know, so he says.
Oh, okay, good.
It could have been some early anxiety. What do you think I was going with that?
No. Just having insinuations is all, you know.
He dresses as a woman! His mother discovered him in the bathroom wearing her brassiere.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, he's pulled out of fights claiming ridiculous injuries since then. That was before he was known for such a thing, but maybe, you know, who knows, that was the first time he did it.
Yeah.
Not saying that is the case, though. Matt will say it, though.
That is the case completely!
But, I mean, with all those issues aside, let's just assume the fight's happening.
Painkillers or no painkillers?
One would hope no painkillers. Hopefully he learned his lesson.
All right.
What do you think of him in this fight? I mean, I don't think Carol Parisian's going to get back to title contention. I think he's, you know, I don't want to call him old guard, but I mean, he doesn't seem to have the well-rounded skills that people are looking for in the welterweight division.
Yeah, I mean, he really dropped off the face of the world. He had that title shot lined up. And he had his injury, and then he came back, and he lost one fight to Diego Sanchez, but then had some more good fights after that he won. But he didn't really win a whole lot of fights in impressive fashion. He and a lot of decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just disappeared. And I don't know if it was his skills deteriorating or if it was people getting better or the combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, he really hasn't done anything to impress me since probably his Diego Sanchez fight. That was probably his last, like, really good fight that I've seen him in. Even though he lost that fight, it was still a pretty good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, since then, he decision Drew Fickett, Josh Berkman, Real Chonin, lost to Thiago Alves, beat Don Young Kim, but had that turn into a no contest after the, as you mentioned, the painkiller issue. Yeah.
And even then, Don Young Kim, I think, should have won that fight, but he just kind of stopped fighting in the third round. I don't know what that deal was, because he didn't look tired. He just kind of, it looked to me like he thought he was ahead on the scorecards and just kind of hung back.
Yeah. And then Parisian has had one fight outside of the UFC since then. He fought in Australia over in July, over the summer. Took a submission rear naked choke victory over Ben Mortimer.
That's
at,
cool.
Impact FC 1, The Uprising. he's fighting Dennis Hallman.
You know, I'd expect Caro to win this fight probably, but that's, I think, more of a commentary on Hallman than it is about Caro.
Right.
Because, you know, I was pretty sure that Hallman was just brought into the UFC to let Matt Hughes avenge the two submission losses that he had to Hallman a long time ago.
How did that happen?
He had no submission defense at the time, apparently, even though he beat Carlos Newton.
Yeah. I mean, I think his most recent fight, Dennis Hallman, was a win over Ben Saunders, and I think...
Which surprised the hell out of all of us.
Yeah, I think we all picked Saunders in that fight, and we were kind of surprised. I think that was fight that ended up seeing Saunders depart the UFC.
Well, I would hope so. I think that should be a rule that if you lose to Dennis Hallman, you're fired.
Vince McMahon style.
You're fired! Yeah.
But, okay, so, Kara Parisian, Matt, you going to back the judo ace, or are you taking...
I'll go with the judo ace.
Yeah. His judo is the very best, or something. I forget.
There are no others, only judo!
All right, and you know, for let's speculate a little bit. Greg, how confident are you that Kara Parisian will fight on Saturday?
I guess I'm not confident at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I give it a 50-50 shot. We're recording this on Monday, so he's got 5 days really to pull out. And, you know, any of those 5 days, it can happen. I'd give a 10% chance for each day.
Yeah.
Which gives it a 50-50 shot. Tomorrow, it'll be a 60-40 shot. By the time you guys hear it, it'll be Wednesday. You know, it'll be 70-30, but any given day. And it actually probably gets more and more likely as each day comes because he's been known to pull out the day before the weigh-ins. Mm. So I think once Friday rolls around, once it's weigh-in day, we'll
if he
probably
weighs in, you
be
think
good.
We're good?
I think so. But, I mean, who knows? Weigh-ins can be intimidating. You got to stand in front of that guy and make angry faces at each other and... I mean, Dennis Hallman is not particularly intimidating looking, but neither was freaking Dustin Hazlett.
Yeah.
So, but then again, they never weighed off against each other. So, I don't know.
All right.
But I don't fully expect that fight to happen, which is probably why it's an undercard fight.
Right. Definitely the UFC, you know, is bringing Parisian back into the fold, but he's on the scheduled to be on the unaired prelims. I guess if the fight is really quick or very impressive for either guy, maybe we'll see it. But yeah, I think the UFC is doing the smart thing and putting him on a prelim card because I believe his Hazlett fight was, you know, on the main card. One of the draws because I believe that was the.
I was looking forward to seeing it.
Right, but wasn't that on the card? Wasn't that St. Pierre Penn 2 or something like that? Or?
No, that was like. Last year when Forrest Griffin fought Tito.
Oh, okay, whatever. I don't retain a lot of information. So, you know. Oh, no, he actually, the Don Young Kim fight was on St. Pierre Penn 2. So.
Oh.
Apologize.
So, yeah, those weren't going to be the same day.
No.
It wasn't a tournament.
That'd be awesome. We could use more tournaments. I'm just saying.
That would be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anything else you guys want to talk about? WEC, I know we want to touch on that, but anything for this card?
Yeah, I mean, as far as breaking down other fights goes, I don't think so. Just mentioned Gerald Harris, the other also featured on the main card, I believe, versus I'm gonna say this name, but I'm gonna say it poorly.
That's a long name.
Maciel Jose Falco Covalcos.
Let's just call him Falco.
Yeah.
Falco.
Right. Who I believe he's making his UFC debut.
Okay. Now, Gerald Harris, I don't think I've ever actually seen, but he had that sweet slam knockout.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, let's focus on Gerald Harris, because A, we can pronounce his name, and we have seen him fight before.
We can just call the other guy Falco, man. Falco.
Yeah, Gerald the Hurricane Harris. Dave Branch, I believe, is that kind of super awesome KO slam. Made ESPN's top 10 things that happened today. List or whatever.
Ooh, so yeah. There were like 9 things cooler that day.
There were only like 9 crazy baseball catches that day that edged him out.
Man, you know, that was the same show that Lesnar fought Carwin.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, that fight in itself was crazy.
Yeah. But, I mean,
know, whatever.
Yeah, Gerald Harris had a pretty good track record in the UFC. 3 wins straight in the UFC.
3-4-3.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. Wins over John Salter, Mario Miranda, and as we mentioned, Dave Branch. That was at UFC 116. You know, he's
pretty good.
Yeah, he's got some IFL experience as well, worth noting. And, you know, it's hard for me to break down this fight, having, you know, not seen his opponent, Goncalves. But, you know... So at a very, very basic, light level, I would favor him in the fight a guy who I have not seen fight.
I would favor Gerald Harris.
Yes.
But I'm not going to do it lightly.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it heavily.
Yes.
Because he's the man.
Right.
And also, the other guy's just some guy.
Right. Also on the card, Brian Foster, Matt Brown.
I like Matt Brown.
Yeah, I like Matt Brown in that fight. And Paul Kelly, T.J. O'Brien.
Don't have a whole lot to say about that
fight.
Yeah,
that was kind of a wash. And Darren Elkins, Edson Barboza on the undercard as well. And
don't even know who those guys are.
Yeah. But, you know, pretty solid main card, UFC 123. Who knows how it will deliver if as far as excitement goes. But I think as far as name value goes and potential for quality fights, something fight fans should be looking forward to.
Yeah. Hooray. It used to be quite entertaining. Certainly more so than UFC 122.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
How, like, what if it wasn't?
Then I would be like,
people would,
Dana.
People would just lose their S. Yeah.
I think I would tweet Dana and be like, Dana, that show sucked.
Yeah. And then he'd be like, shut up, F face.
I am the Alpha and the Omega.
Yes. At Greg Rowland. Yes. we mentioned at the beginning of the show, WEC, it's second to last event under the WEC banner. Happened last week. No need to break down the card, but I just mentioned Uriah Faber had a successful drop down to bantamweight.
Yes.
So I'd say that puts his name perhaps in contention, in consideration perhaps for a future challenge at the title belt because he's Uriah Faber.
He is Uriah Faber.
That's exactly who he be.
And that's how Zuffa rolls. Hey, this guy has a name and
an endorsement deal.
Yeah.
And he's on commercials.
He's in commercials with Kenny Powers, man.
Kenny Powers? Really?
Kenny effing Powers. Have you not seen those?
Oh,
no.
I saw that, yeah.
K-Swiss, man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a pretty funny commercial, too.
He transcends race, hombre. Right.
So a pretty solid fighter with good marketability equals, hey, and you know...
that's exactly what
hey, it title shot.
It's for horses.
Yeah. Hey, you get a title shot, easily. I mean, you know, it was nice of Zuffa to give him not the Vitor Belfort treatment and actually let him win a fight at the weight class he could potentially challenge.
Yeah, not have him have a catchweight fight at 140 first and then just give him a title shot.
Yeah, you got it, yeah. But, you know, I believe Dominic Cruz and I think Scott Jorgensen will be fighting for the bantamweight title. Let me double-check that. I might forget what weight class Scott Jorgensen was in momentarily. But, yeah, the penultimate WC event, it was a very solid fight, but I think the big takeaway there was, Uriah Faber's successful debut at bantamweight, and then Chad Mendez kind of showed him, still worked his wrestling game against Javier Vasquez, but it did show some more sparks of aggression on the feet and seemed to have, opened up a bit more on the feet.
I'm sure you guys have talked about this already, but... When UFC is absolved by, or yeah, by a
WEC
absorbed into UFC, are they still going to be on the Versus network?
Yes.
Okay.
But
so it's going to be like
all branded to UFC and
UFC on Versus then?
Yes. Which they set the stage for that this last year, and there might be actually less events overall under the Zuffa banner because of that. But I think overall we kind of settled on it being a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah. You may not have been in the decision-making process for that, man, but we decided it's a good thing.
Here. I'm here for you.
Yeah, Dominic Cruz will
I'm
be taking...
I'm a team player.
Yeah, Dominic Cruz, who recently defended his title against Joseph Benavidez for the bantamweight title, will be fighting Scott Jorgensen.
All right.
Next, and then, I don't know if we'll give Uriah Faber another fight, see how that pans out. It might depend who wins the Jorgensen-Cruz fight, because I believe Uriah Faber... And Dominic Cruz have fought before, yes, WEC 26 back in the day.
Yeah.
And so that nice, I think that's a built-in grudge match there, Uriah Faber's got to win over the champ if he's still champ at that point. And Uriah Faber, again, the WEC's most marketable fighter, and at this point he'll be the UFC's most marketable bantamweight fighter.
Yeah, or even featherweight.
Yes, indeed.
Hell yes.
So, I don't know if you guys had any other thoughts on the WEC from last week, but, again, it's been like a week now, so.
I was a little upset to see Demacio Page lose to Demetrius Johnson.
Yes.
I like Page. He reminds me of a miniature version of Tank Abbott. Just some
in
highlight reels in my head that I saw him fight. There was one fight where he just kind of pushed this guy up against the cage. Like, he put his hand on the guy's neck and just shoves him against the cage and punched him in the face until he fell down, which is... A very Tank Abbott-esque move. And I recall another fight from a long time ago where he gets clocked by a shot that he didn't see coming. And then he just kind of like looks at the guy and sticks out his chin, and the guy is like, okay, and just reaches back and punches him as hard as he could.
Mm-hmm.
And Paige just took it, and the wind just totally went out of that guy's sails, and then he just got his ass kicked. So that was cool, but he got dominated and I think choked out by Demetrius Johnson, Mr. Mighty Mouse.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, that was a good, impressive win, but I just would have liked to see Paige get some ridiculous highlight reel out. But Demetrius Johnson getting this win is a good thing, I guess, in that he is too small to fight at 135. So, you know, they're talking about getting that 125 weight class in there, and he is a potential star down the line for that, I guess, and has been vocal about it. Like, hey, you guys get that weight class, I want in.
All right. Very good. Quick mention, then we should probably sign off. But day before UFC 123, Strikeforce Challengers card on Showtime.
Oh, that's cool.
Where's your time? Shaolin Ribeiro taking on Justin Wilcox, Antoine Britt versus Ovince St. Preux, Jan Finney, Liz Carmouche, and Carlos Fodor versus Derek Gestel.
Wait, so Fedor is fighting?
No.
Oh.
So, but yeah, no, you know, Challengers cards, something to do Friday night. A good way to see some talent you might not see on the Strikeforce main cards. So. All
right. Now I see Wes Shivers fighting on the undercard of
this. Yeah, Goldman versus Goldman Butler.
Is that Wes Shivers from the Ultimate Fighter Season 10? He'd be a heavyweight that was former NFL guy?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, you should click on him.
Yeah, let me click. I got to go back now. I have to refresh. Hold on. Processing.
If so, he sucks.
Loading. Yeah, it is.
It is?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, he sucks.
But he should be. I mean, if he's going to fight in Strikeforce, Challenger's card is the place for him on the undercard.
Yeah, well, I guess so. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Man, he got his butt kicked.
Yeah, so a nice weekend of MMA coming up. You know, get the little pregame going with Strikeforce Challengers on Friday, and then, you know, get your big old pay-per-view hard on Saturday.
Yes, indeed.
My. Didn't realize it was that kind of party, Tobin.
Not watching it at Tobin's house, say that much.
I'm not watching it at my house.
Oh.
In that case, I guess I will watch it at Tobin's house. We'll be safe there.
Yes. All right, well,
then
thanks.
Run up his bill.
Don't you have to go grapple some guys without their clothes on, Greg?
Hey, he got third place in grappling dudes.
He's grappling expert, Greg.
Indeed. All right, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We are The Audio Choke here at MMATorch.com. Feel free to leave a comment. Go to the forum to start a discussion at Audio Choke. Audio Choke at Facebook and Twitter.com. Until next time.
Hi, I'm Greg Rowan.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
I'm Matt Collins. Get you next time inside The Audio Choke.
The Audio Choke.
Sorry, I got a little testy there at the end. Late for my Walking Dead appointment.